Back in 1990, and I think it actually began sometime in 89, maybe late 89, but went through 1990 anyway. There was a federal investigation through the U.S. Attorney's Office. The U.S. Attorney was Chuck Banks. Head of Federal Drug Task Force was Bob Govar, his chief deputy prosecutor at that time. And they had an ongoing investigation, apparently, on not so much Kevin and Don as much as public official corruption in Saline County. And they already had some intelligence on some of the public officials, including Dan Harmon, Richard Garrett, and numerous other ones. Many names, almost everyone from Saline County would recognize. But at any rate, in December 1993, a young man came forward to a friend of Kevin's. He was actually buying a car from him, and he started telling him about having witnessed what happened to Kevin and Don. This friend of Kevin's told me, he said, "Whoa, you're talking to the wrong person. You need to talk to Kevin's mom. Tell her this stuff." And he agreed to talk with me, and Mike, his Kevin's friend, put us together. And he told a pretty wild story, which included putting Dan Harmon on the tracks that night, which, you know, at that point I already suspected might very well be true. But I was incredulous, and some of it seemed, you know, pretty wild, but it, you know, it had all the right players. It had a lot of the key elements. It had it had a ring of truth to it. I didn't know really one way or the other about Tommy at that point, but I turned him over to John Brown, who was a Saline County Sheriff's Office investigator at the time. He was working the case, and John Brown interviewed him, and he felt, just as I did, that it was certainly something that had to be checked out thoroughly. This young man was very young, which was probably my biggest, I don't know if you can even call it a reservation. It was a big question in my mind. At the time Kevin and Don were killed, he was only 12 years old, and he was 17 in 1993 when he came and talked with me for the first time. And so that certainly was, you know, in the back of my mind the whole time. But, and, you know, I was really curious also as to why he would even know. Number one, why would he even be on the tracks? Which the story went that he and two friends were there looking for a marijuana patch that they knew was planted near the tracks, and happened to see a commotion going on the tracks, and started kind of creeping through the woods a little bit and trying to get up closer to see what was going on. And he named a number of people there, including Dan Harmon and others. I think I said people would recognize a number of the names. And all of them rumored and or known to be involved in drugs. At any rate, when John interviewed him, he was in the process of trying to verify or discredit different elements of Tommy's story. And, you know, another big curiosity of mine is, how did he know the 17 or, at the time, 12-year-old child know who Dan Harmon was? Well, the answer was he dated his mother, was in and out of their apartment all the time. And some of the other names that came up were that people that lived in the same apartment complex, which I knew to be true. And so, it, you know, it certainly had a ring of truth in it, and but still was a pretty incredulous story. At any rate, Tommy Niehaus agreed to talk to me. We talked. I turned him over to John Brown. John Brown was working on the information and happened to be at the Little Rock FBI headquarters one day amidst all of that, and happened to mention this new witness that we had been talking to. And the agent that he talked to told him that they were very, very interested, because of their public corruption investigation and the fact that some of that information corroborated information they already had on file. And so they brought Tommy Niehaus in. He agreed to go to the FBI, agreed to a polygraph, was polygraphed, and passed the FBI polygraph, placing certain persons there, including Dan Harmon. You know, I think that's when reality really sunk in on me, probably, when there really wasn't much question in my mind that Dan Harmon had actually been there that night. He not only passed the FBI polygraph test, but they put him into protective custody in a Little Rock hotel. I have copies of the receipts and everything from the hotel. He didn't stay there but a very short time. I can't remember exactly, maybe a couple of days, 2 or 3 days. And his mother would not cooperate. He was a minor still at the time. He was 17 years old. He was 12 the night he witnessed the murders, but he was 17 when we talked. And so he was still a minor and had to have parental permission for anything that the FBI did with him. And she wouldn't agree to keep him in protective custody. And that happened. I stayed in touch with Tommy for years until the day he died. And which was, can't remember the year now. He was an adult, though, in his 30s. I had a child of his own, straightened up his life, was a good person. Tommy made a lot of mistakes. And, you know, in my mind, and Tommy freely admitted things that he did and participated in as far as drugs and other things. When it was all said and done, Tommy got his heart right. He was HIV positive all the years that I knew him, although he never developed full-blown AIDS. He did develop cancer. At least that was the cause of death, the official cause of death. And I stayed in contact with him, and Tommy Niehaus is another witness with many, many, many accurate details that never changed over the years. You know, Tommy Niehaus died a respected person in my mind. All the respect in the world to Tommy Niehaus. His family was torn apart. Tommy was a throwaway child. I'll just, you know, not trying to diss his mother or anybody else, I guess, really and truly. I don't know her or any of his other family. Tommy's the only one that I knew. But he was a throwaway child. He never stood a chance. His mother was involved with people and things that she shouldn't have been, and that's the way he was raised. Again, he paid for it in the end with his life. And the appearance of Tommy Niehaus coming forward in December 1993 is what started the federal FBI investigation into Kevin and Don's murders. They were already looking at public corruption in Saline County, but not at the murders per se, although they had made links between the public corruption and the murders, even at that time. So that's what opened the 1993 federal investigation by the FBI. And it continued on until the end of 1995, when I was told, after they tested physical evidence that had been turned in and located, and I don't know what all, a very detailed almost 2-year investigation that accumulated over 17,000 documents that a murder hadn't even really occurred. It was time for me to accept that. That shut down the 1993 FBI investigation, although they claimed it never was really shut down and refused to turn over any official documents through FOI. We did FOI, FBI documents, all of them, and they at first denied having anything, said they did not have one page on the murders of Kevin and Don. And some stranger, I don't even know his name to this day, appeared on my doorstep one day with 7 pages of FBI documents. And, I was pretty surprised and flabbergasted that some stranger I didn't even know had 7 pages of documents I'd been trying to get for years. And so Mara Leverett at that time decided to write a book about the case, and she FOI'd the FBI. They claimed they didn't have any pages on Kevin and Dawn either. In the end, after a can't remember how many years Mara's battle lasted with the FBI, numerous requests and denials and appeals, they finally, in the end, admitted, after a state senator got involved, that they had over 17,000 pages. And of those, they decided that we were entitled to, don't have an exact count now, I used to, somewhere maybe a little over 2,000 is all we ever got. And they were very heavily redacted. And we've been fighting that battle since mid-90s, late 90s, when Mara started, or actually I started it first, and then Mara continued it, and then I took it up again, and I present day have a lawsuit that was filed in 2012 against them, the government and every alphabet letter agency there was, most of which has been thrown out. The only agency left that we have a chance of getting anything from is seven pages from the DEA that they've refused to turn over, and we're still fighting that battle today from late 90s to 2019. So it's an ongoing battle, but I want those documents. I'm entitled to those documents, and I'm not going to quit fighting with them over it until the day I die, I guess. Just absolutely refuse to do that. I'm not going to play dead for them. I may be dead before it's over with. Not that I'm saying I'm fearful for my life. I've never really given that a whole lot of thought, to tell you the truth. They did the worst possible thing they could do to me already. You know, what left was there to do? So that was never a fear. I did have some kind of scary situations, two or three. You know, that's, like I said, that's just not the way I play. So it continues to this day. We're still out there throwing stones, being a thorn in the side, and whatever satisfaction, if I can make them miserable, then I'm proud to do it. Consider it a badge of courage and honor, not so much courage as honor. Doesn't take much courage when they do something like that to your child. It pretty much takes the fear of God out of you. So I want to talk some more a little bit later about when Gene Duffy and I got together. Took us a while to get together. I tried to approach her at one time, and of course she wanted nothing to do with me because she thought I was still best friends with Dan Harmon. And there was a big smear campaign going on about her that was, I don't know, I don't even know how to describe it. It's crazy. They printed so many lies and smears, and anything Dan Harmon or anybody else said about Gene Duffy was never checked for authenticity, accuracy, or anything else. Just a big smear campaign. But she and I will go into that a little bit later and how we got together and teamed up. And really and truly, I was just pretty much impotent and totally ineffective on my own out there, and didn't make much headway at all anywhere I went, but didn't keep me from going over and over and over. But when she and I got together, and we started winning a few small battles anyway, and we'll talk about those a little bit later.